Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 647. Kyle Clark.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. You're particularly like AM traffic reporty right now. I like it.
Well, let's go to traffic and then we're going to see what's happening. I should just do the tick, 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 like the typewriters in the background. Like we're in a busy, bustling newsroom. Anything on the Nerdist Community Corkboard?
I got one that I think you're going to enjoy. Are you familiar with Texas?
I've heard of it.
Well, there's a town in Denton, and on April 4th, they're having an entire day dedicated to Doctor Who. They're having Doctor Who Day
in Denton, Texas, April 4th?
Yes.
You are shitting me.
They are showing Doctor Who, the Ninth Doctor miniseries as like a big public screening. And they're just literally, it's a full day full of just Doctor Who activities.
Interesting choice. That's fantastic.
It looks real cool. That came from Jake Eckes. And that sounds insane. They're going to have just TARDISes and sonic screwdrivers. And just Texas will become a whole little nexus of the universe.
Love it. I love it. Anything else on there?
I got another one for this guy, Mike Valdez, who has sent it a couple times. He has a band called Mike Valdez and the Noise, and they have an album called Dreamer that he just put out. We got a lot of talented young musicians who have been sending in stuff. And
great. So send in everything. Events@nerdist.com.
So Mike Valdez and the Noise.bandcamp.com, because God love Bandcamp and all their supporting independent music. But his record's pretty good. He's hit me up on Twitter a few times. He is a really talented young musician, and I really like his record. So you should get that record, put it in your car, and then road trip to Doctor Who Day.
Yes! I'm adding a bunch more cities to the Fun Comfortable Tour, so go to funcomfortabletour.com. I have cities through the rest of the year. I will be going to Texas, not on April 4th, unfortunately, but I would.
If only you had some kind of object that could transcend space and time.
I don't know. I don't know what that would be.
I mean, maybe somebody could write in with an idea of some sort.
I don't know. I need to make a phone call in this police box. What's happening? Also, I believe we're doing a beta test at Meltdown the 16th in a week.
Yep.
March 16th. I don't know who's on that show just yet, but it'll be me and two people.
On This Is Rad, we record it while you're doing beta test upstairs. And so sometimes when it gets real loud, we'll just be like, good one, Chris.
Oh, thanks. But it's not always me, Kyle. There's other comedians on there.
We just assume it's you.
Who was on the last one? The last one was...
That was the epic one with April Richardson and TJ Miller.
It was Matt Kirshen.
That was it.
Yeah, Matt Kirshen was on
there,
too.
I just am always excited to see that April Richardson because she's a delight.
She's delightful.
If only there was a way they could see her as she's traveling across the country.
Yeah, on the Fun Comfortable Tour.
Yeah,
this episode is Jack Antonoff, who was promoting the Bleachers album Strange Desire. Jack was in the band Fun, and he is
such a nice man.
He's so nice.
It was crazy. Like, that was just everybody walked away. What a nice man.
I mean, not just nice, but what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, and Steel Train, because I love Steel Train.
You love Steel Train.
Steel Train are a solid band.
Very introspective guy. Super... kind of a deep fellow.
Super deep.
I would say. But I enjoyed having him on, and so we'll have him back again at some point. Thanks, Jack Antonoff. And I believe he's just Jack Antonoff on Twitter, so follow his various musings on the tweets. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 647 with Jack Antonoff. Katie, start the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I was in a comedy group, a musical comedy duo, and this was the album.
Hard and Firm.
Hard and Firm. Hardwick and Furman.
Yeah.
This picture is a piece of... there's this place in Tucson called the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, and all of the... it's basically a bunch of indigenous animals to the desert.
Oh.
And they've sort of carved this... sort of like a natural zoo, like the sort of natural enclosures, but it very much like just blends into the desert, and they're all indigenous creatures.
That's cool.
And so this was a sign, like this was a sign for the display of Horses and Grasses.
Oh, nice.
Are you from Tucson?
No, but my ex-girlfriend was from Tucson.
Really?
And so we used to go there all the time.
Yeah, you're a real desert fan.
The what?
Club Congress.
I've been there.
It's a really cool place.
Yeah, it's... I really like Tucson a lot. I really like it. But anyway, I had to call the museum and be like, can I use this picture for an album cover? And they were like, well, what's the content like? And, you know, some of our content is a little sweary.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I think we say the F word and maybe like tits a couple times. And the guy was like, Oh, all right. Everyone's
what's the band called?
That.
Chris and Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, that's the backstory for this. But we're not here to talk about my old comedy groups, Jack. We're here to talk about Jack today.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Just pretty good?
Yeah, well, I've been in bed. My girlfriend had her appendix out, and so I've been in bed because she's recovering for 3 days straight. So
oh my
I'm
God.
Like, you know when you take time off, and instead of it being like relaxing, it's like strange?
Yes, it's strange because it's the momentum of all the times that you were not relaxing all of a sudden coming to a sudden stop, and your
but
body...
But on someone else's account.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your body slamming into itself.
Totally. And there's like a lot of people are sending cupcakes... Mm-hmm. So I feel like really bloated.
Yeah.
But I'm good.
Are cupcakes good for an appendix out?
No, people don't think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially like flowers. Like people send flowers and it's like, what do you do with flowers?
Well, why don't they just send her a good appendix?
That's a exactly.
Did anyone think
a better one? No, no one thought to do that.
Dicks.
Just a lot of crap from Jones on Third.
Pretty rude. That's good enough. It's expensive enough that it looks like we tried.
I was not raised that way. Like I've never sent a thank you card. I've never sent a you're looking at me like that's terrible. I've never okay, I thought you were making a thank you card face.
Yeah, you're really sensitive about the thank you card thing.
Well, because some people are like, you don't send fucking thank you cards.
Yeah,
like, that's terrible.
My wife's father,
never.
Too. Yeah.
Never?
I've never. Have you?
I have, yeah.
I wasn't raised like that. If someone's sick, I don't send them food. Just like my parents didn't do that for me. Or
I give them a hollow, let me know if you need anything.
Yeah, like I text all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
What if they let you know? What if they're like, oh, okay, can you run by the store and pick up some honeycomb?
I've done it. People have called my bluff, and I've had to man up and like bring friends' soup.
Yeah, like that's manning up?
Yeah, I don't want to drive across town for someone else's soup.
Manning up is like fighting a bear, like not going to the store.
No, like a modern man up.
Oh, okay, got you.
Yeah, like giving someone a ride when it was a...
Exactly,
offer.
Being inconvenienced.
Contemporary man up.
Yeah,
Did her appendix burst or
no? It was just like a precautionary. It was like a preemptive.
Oh, okay.
Removal.
Something was wrong though, right? It wasn't like, why don't you just take this out and we'll see what happens.
No, it wasn't like there's a couple days off. Let's do this. It was a good idea.
Good.
I mean, doctors, you do what they say, you know.
In general, yeah.
But it did get this conversation going where my dream in life, mm-hmm. which is sort of what happened to her, is that I'll go to the doctor and he'll look all over the place and then he'll like say it's this and then he'll like put his hand on me and be like, you're going to start feeling a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
Because don't you feel like shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Like, and it's like nothing, right?
Right.
Like, there's nothing wrong with you.
Right.
Don't you wish like a doctor would be like, we found the thing.
Yeah.
And you're going to start feeling a lot less tired. A lot less weird.
There's one weird hair on your shoulder, and if we pull it out, everything's going to fall into place.
I knew it. I knew that was something.
Yeah. I feel like everyone feels this way. Everyone feels like garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
there's got to be something better.
Well, the reason that everyone feels like garbage is because...
Here we go.
We don't take time to not be plugged into something at all times. Like, your attention is being sapped. All day long, you're having to focus on things all day long, and we're mentally exhausted. So I think that's probably, well, in your case too, you're busy with work shit too.
Yeah, but I feel like your life becomes your life. So then I stop thinking about touring as something that makes me tired or hurts my body.
Right.
So I just think about the fact that do I have mono?
Right.
Is there something wrong?
Yeah.
Can someone help?
Is there anything that anyone can do?
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people are addicted to pills and things.
Well, I spend a lot of money on like injections and stuff.
Oh, like B12s and shit?
Yeah.
Does it work?
I don't know. I think so.
I'd like to think it does.
Yeah, I think
I feel pretty energetic with it when I get them done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get the one that makes you feel like you peed?
Yeah.
Magnesium, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
weird.
And
there's another one where they put some milk thistle in it.
Yeah. I do all that stuff because... Hey,
are you guys getting injections at Whole Foods?
You probably could.
Yeah, some of these injection places are pretty much just like holistic mumbo jumbo stuff, but you know. But I think it works.
You know what would be really great would be hug injections where someone could just transfer whatever minerals you needed from
that's
their
sex.
Body.
That's a hug injection.
Oh, it is. Yeah,
yeah
I guess
yeah,
that's
when you
true.
Hug and then there's fluids.
Yeah. So that's like literal milk thistle. turning into a baby. So it's okay that you came here today and not...
Oh, yeah, it's the tail end of it.
Okay, good.
But it's just weird to have time to do nothing. It makes you feel worse when people say it's going to make you feel better.
Have you been watching anything?
I watched the...
You could catch up on Girls. I heard that show's real good.
It's so good. Drug Lord documentary on El Chapo.
Yeah.
You see it?
No.
You know El Chapo?
No, I don't know this one.
He's like apparently like the biggest dude.
Like right cartel. Now?
Well, he's been taken out.
Oh.
Well, he was arrested. But it's
like an appendix.
Yeah. That's where they got him.
Yep.
I watched the Descendants documentary.
Filmage. It's great.
That's great.
It's great. But it's like nothing really like... Nothing really new. Bad happens. Like, it's like, you know, it's like the guy ends up getting like a brain tumor.
It's a fan-only documentary.
It really is. If you want footage you haven't seen yet.
It's just cool.
Yeah, it's just really, really cool. I enjoyed it. It made me feel good. I
started watching The Affair.
How is that? Yeah, they just got picked up for a second season, so it must have been good.
It's okay. I don't like they do this thing that makes me fucking crazy where they... We can curse, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes me fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me want to fucking kill myself. But where they like... Half the episode is his perspective and the other half is her perspective, which is sort of a neat idea, right?
Yeah.
But in every time they switch perspectives, not only did different things happen, and not even like a subtle way, like people seeing things, definitely like totally different things happen and they're wearing different clothes. So I just don't understand.
It gets hard to
like what
up.
Element of like science fiction.
Some characters are white that are black, and the other one like they just mix
that's
it up.
That's problematic, yeah.
Well, I think maybe that's just a way to further... change like to further show the idea of just how wildly different perspectives can be.
It bugs me. And McNulty's in it.
Yeah.
And I always see him as McNulty.
Yep.
It's okay. TV's weird. It's a weird time in TV because I feel like I could watch anything sometimes.
You know, the days of just sitting on the couch and letting whatever's on hit you in the face, I haven't had that in a real long time.
Well, nothing's really procedural anymore.
No.
Everything is like you have to be so invested. Or
yeah,
like,
everything has an arc now.
Yeah.
Except for Law and Order. That's why it continues to be just such a powerhouse.
I don't think it's on anymore, is it?
Well, one of them is.
NCIS
right?
is not Law and Order.
No, or it's not?
It is.
Aren't the Law and Orders done, Kyle?
I think there's one still on. I think SVU maybe. SVU
still on? Oh.
That's the sex one, right?
Yeah.
Special Victims Unit.
It's a sex thing.
That's a sex crimes one. Yeah, I haven't seen that one, I never watched. I hadn't seen that one, but boy, I remember the days of when I had all the free time in the world, which I don't miss, but catching like 3 or 4 Law and Orders and maybe a few Quantum Leaps on the USA channel.
Yeah.
And not thinking about which episode is going to be, just watching it.
I wish Sam could have leaped into Jack McCoy. That would have been really fun.
That would have been fun.
But I don't foresee that crossover happening now since both shows are not happening anymore. But anyway, if Sam Waterston or Scott Bakula is listening to the podcast and you have control over that IP, then by all means, let's make it happen.
I'm surprised they haven't tried to bring it back.
What, Quantum Leap?
Yeah.
That's a show that should come back. Did you watch Quantum Leap?
No. Do people want it back?
Yes!
I really enjoyed it, yeah.
It's a good show.
When was it on, like late 90s?
Early 90s.
No, early 90s. Yeah.
Maybe late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, it was good. Well, Scott, how old are you?
30.
30.
Okay, 32. It was around.
Are you 30?
No.
How old are you?
I'm a lot older than that.
A lot?
Mm-hmm.
You look about 30.
I appreciate that.
And it's your birthday.
I'll be 43.
Nice. You're tomorrow. Days.
Sunday. Yeah.
That's great.
Sunday.
How does that feel?
Well.
Was 40 a big deal?
39 was a big deal.
I understand that. I think 31 is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, because it's not.
For the same reason.
Because it's like, this thing is coming.
Yeah.
But then once you turn it, then you're like, well. Here I am.
Can't stop it.
I'm okay. Yeah. I'm okay. You know what I think it is? You know, it's funny because I think it's just whatever this idea built up in my head about, you know, where you... When you start to approach it, then you start going like, oh, yeah, I don't have all the time in the world.
Yeah.
There is an end point to everything. And so that's sort of a head trip. And then just these preconceived notions we had about our parents' generation and what it means to be certain ages and just these ideas of what we put in our heads. And
you actually have like 20 years off of that, I think.
I hope. Yeah. So I'm like 23. And then...
It's easier for a man, though.
With
the children conversation.
Because we could potentially forever.
You have a lot of time.
Yeah. Tony Randall was having kids well into his 70s.
Jesus.
And... So live like Tony Randall is the lesson for today. Thanks for tuning in. But I think that you know, it is weird. It is strange. But philosophically, you know, I look at it and I go, well, I'm in better shape and doing better in my life than I ever have been, so that should be good. But then you're like, yeah, but the number. So it is sort of, I don't know, it's sort of weird.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I think about dying a lot, so it's a weird thing.
You do?
Yeah, how can you not?
How do you want to die?
I don't want to.
Well, we have to.
I mean, in the most square way. Like, I would love to just, like, you know,
during a scandal marathon?
Yeah, during a scandal marathon, and you know, like a long, long time from now, just sort of like drift off. Or you know what? With everyone I love
surrounding
in a fucking blaze of shit. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like when I'm on an airplane, I feel very scared. And when I'm on an airplane with like all the people that I would miss if we're dead or whatever, yeah. I'm not scared anymore.
Well, that's interesting.
So it'd actually be nice if like I was 100 and then they were taking me on a family vacation to celebrate my life.
Right.
And on this trip,
yeah, and selfish at the same time.
And on this trip, we all went down together.
Yeah, they were taking you on a cannonball exploration.
Yes,
where you basically everyone just does weird circus things. Yeah. And then mishap. We shouldn't have shot a 100-year-old guy out of a cannon. But at least we were all here.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they have to die too.
Well, okay. Then how about this? We fire your because now I'm involved in the planning of it. We fire your 100-year-old body into your friends and family. Or at least like into like you could put them around some type of a device that would then explode when you hit
like
it.
A Rube Goldberg
something, like, yeah, like a Rube Goldberg. We could turn you into a Rube Goldberg. Yeah,
I trigger something that triggers something that annihilates them.
That's right.
You know what I really want actually now that I'm thinking about it is I want the world to end because I think it would be stressful like serious FOMO.
Yeah,
to die and then everything keeps going.
It'll definitely happen.
When I die.
No, I mean, like, the world will definitely end.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think that that's a fair thing to hope, not hope for, but wonder if that in our generation we'll see the world end. That's not crazy. Not, and I don't mean end in, like, a like we destroy the world, like, just some like, right. horrible nuclear situation.
Right.
Like, it's that's not insane.
No, I guess it's not insane. But it would be... It would be pretty,
or something vaguely apocalyptic.
It would have to be a pretty insane event for the entire world to get snuffed out.
Yeah, not the whole
world,
but just something apocalyptic. Where it's like it gets bad.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the Omega Man
and me and my loved ones can move on.
But at some point,
as long as they're not doing anything without me,
at some point in billions of years, the sun will expand and take out everything near it, and then. So it really is a race.
No, it's not a race.
It's a race to get to another planet.
Oh, that's what you... Okay. Yeah. I don't... Not for us, though. For other people, maybe. We're not going to make it there.
No.
We're not going to be around.
No, we won't.
Mono, it's so stressful.
Our molecules will be around, though.
What?
Our strands of carbon will be around, redistributed into the carbon sphere.
We talking like other lives?
No, I think our literal molecules will just be scattered and reabsorbed over and over again.
Oh.
Scattered into the earth and then...
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think we'll have any consciousness about it, but I think ultimately, what if you like we're in seventh grade and we all just got high for the first time?
Yeah, hey, man. Some real NYU freshman shit. Like, I don't believe in God, but like this table could be God. Like,
I think he's like an old man with a big white beard, but... Yeah.
You know, maybe he's got a goatee.
Yeah.
I don't know, bro.
My God has a goatee.
If religion's taught us one thing, it's that Jesus was definitely white.
point is, I don't want to be like torn apart by wolves or anything like that.
Right.
That's the one
thing
I'm sure of.
Slowly. You just want it to be like super fast.
Yeah.
You just like want your head to come off or just
no,
want
not
it
that
to
either.
Explode? You want to explode?
I'd like to explode.
Right.
Yeah.
Spontaneously combust?
You just sort of like just to explode.
Yeah. I don't know if spontaneous combustion... I think spontaneous combustion is bad news because you basically... I think you're still conscious while you're...
Expanding.
While you're catching on fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also has implications for the things around you, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
true.
Can you just spontaneously combust without, like, certain, like, science stuff happening around you that's not good for the environment?
Oh, like, do you let off of some certain gas?
That annihilates the other people you love, maybe?
Maybe.
Well, I see where you're going with this.
Spontaneous family combustion. That's really interesting. You know, it's funny. I've talked about this before, but it's not the actual death part that I'm super afraid of, but it's all of the dread that would surround such a thing. And it's interesting that we're talking about this because it's this sort of the year anniversary of my dad dying, and that was just he had a heart attack, and just that was it.
No,
nothing. He was totally fine up to that point. Obviously, yeah. He wasn't fine, or he wouldn't have had a heart attack. But for all intents and purposes, he was fine.
Yeah,
and then gone. And I think, I mean, obviously it's horrible, but I think like, wow, what a great way to go. Like how lucky that he didn't have to wither and, you know, and it sucks to lose someone suddenly, but at the same time, he didn't have to suffer. He didn't have to know it was coming. The family didn't have to watch him shrivel. Like it was like, oh yeah, that's how you want to go. Like, yeah. I have indigestion and then
remembered
gone.
Yes. Himself.
Yes.
It's
absolutely.
Better to burn out than to fade away.
Right.
Yeah.
Spontaneous combustion. So it was. So it's, for me, I think that would probably be a great way at some point. Just not soon.
No, not soon.
Do you feel like you're in a? Do you feel like you're in a race? Like I gotta beat death to some finish line of things to make.
Yeah, I really do. I don't know why. But I feel very like stressed about the things I want to accomplish and how I'm going to do them, and that list of things keeps changing. So it's sort of like a spiral. It's sort of like the thing that keeps me alive and kills me at the same time.
Did you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
Well, I had two siblings. One died actually, which is topical.
Oh, geez.
Like 12 years ago, the opposite was sick for a long time. But so now I have one sister.
So she must have just been a kid.
Yeah, she was 13.
Oh my God.
I was 18 at the time. But which I think plays into that. Like, I don't know how you felt since you lost your father, but like, I think that when you lose people and then you're so aware of how quick it is, you just, some people have the opposite reaction and just, you know, lie face down in bed, but then other people get like obsessed with the things they want to do.
Right.
Like I had a little bit of that.
To just like, oh shit, there's very limited. We must do as much as possible.
Yeah. Just sort of like the cliche feeling of like, we got to live, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what though? What's interesting about that is that you can run around scrambling around so much that you're actually not living. You're just occupying your time with activities and chores.
I think about that a lot with work. It's like, there's all these things I want to do, but then like, how do you also find the balance to, you know, the past 3 days of like lying in bed, like that was also pretty exciting. You know, there were a lot of like interesting conversations and we just sort of existed.
Yeah, it's hard. It's because in some cases you do one or the other, where it's very much an all or nothing kind of an approach. Some people are very good with moderation where they can go, yeah, you know, I work during the week and then Saturday, you know, like our manager, Alex, is like, he's works like a dog all week long. But then, you know, Friday, it's like Friday rolls along and he's like, yeah, I just hung out with the kids and just chased a ball around the yard and swatted the kids on the ass and gave them hugs. And
you can call him, you can try and talk about work, but he won't hear it.
And he's fulfilled.
He's totally fulfilled.
He's the happiest guy I know.
Really?
Yeah.
Just loves it.
Wow.
Yeah. Loves his life and just is so easygoing and really just probably one of the most balanced people we know.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel jealous of that.
Yeah, I think about it a lot. I think about like just, you know, the idea of like trying to figure out like aspirations and work and also just having like a fulfilling life of like, you know, friends and meaningful moments that come from outside of accomplishments. That's a thing that I've always been trying to
figure
out.
It's also a nature nurture thing. So what did you learn how did you learn to deal with the world? And then also what specific chemicals happen to be, you know, squishing around in your brain that predispose you to certain behavior patterns,
yeah,
I would imagine. But
I deal with a lot of like chip on my shoulder stuff with work, like that
you resent it?
No. Like I feel like I grew up in like, you know, middle class New Jersey, where it was like everyone went to school and then went to college. I didn't do that stuff, and like in those, you know, some uptown shit. But like in the context of my life, like that was like everyone was like, oh, he's a loser, he's going on tour, and so a lot of my career and my work ethic is also based on like, I'm not a loser.
Yeah, proving
like,
them wrong.
Yeah, like there's this invisible person.
We've already
like,
done a pretty good job of,
but it doesn't go
that.
Away.
No, like, I know it doesn't go away. Yeah. I know it doesn't go away. But
some people just feel like someone's against them or not. I don't know if it's a bad thing always.
I think a lot of it has to do with goal setting and the specificity of your goal setting. So in other words, it's funny that we set so many goals that are event based or thing based or out or externally based. It's like, oh, I want to do this, or I have to accomplish this, I have to accomplish this. And then ultimately you would think, well, the underlying reason must be so that I can be happy and fulfilled. But it's very rare that people set goals where they go, you know, I want to go to bed every night happy or feeling fulfilled. And so I'm going to make choices during that day. Some day that might be work. Some days that might be exercising. Some days that might be shoving brownies into my face. Like, but every day I'm going to go to bed happy. It's weird that we sort of try to take these circuitous routes to happiness without just going, I think I'm just going to try to figure out what makes me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is weird. Like, I feel like I'm happy in a big way.
Yes.
But a lot of nights I go to bed or wake up really, you know, miserable, stressed.
Yeah.
But I think that those are all part of things that are making me happy in the big way.
Right, right, right. It's it's funny that you can have a macro happiness but micro stress.
Yeah.
Like, I do have a lot of, like, lately I've had a lot of, like, waking up in the morning, looking in the mirror, and being like, I've made a series of decisions that have led me here, you know, to looking like a 95-year-old professor.
Well, the good news is that you are only 30 years old, and then you have plenty of time to...
And you don't have a doctorate.
Yep, to fill your life with whatever you want.
You're not a professor. Yeah. You're not an Egyptian professor.
So... It is, you can still do whatever you want. What else do you want to do besides music stuff?
I basically want to do this, but I want to keep doing it better, you know, and I want to keep pushing, at it really hard. And that's, that sounded gross.
No, not at all. How do you define what's better?
That's the tough thing, is it just sort of like is a feeling or it isn't, you know? So you work on stuff, you work on stuff for months and months, and it could be like, cool, and you could have an idea that happens in 2 minutes. You're like, that's the shit. Like, that's the cool thing. You know, that's the thing that feels really interesting. That's the thing that I'm really proud to do. And so it's like this weird search for that feeling.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep working and putting yourself in the position to hope it happens.
Yeah.
And it feels really good when it happens, but it's like anytime it happens, I immediately have this feeling of like, oh fuck, when's it going to happen again? It's like how people describe, you know, heroin or whatever.
Yeah.
The dragon.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're addicted to the high of accomplishment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it does feel so good. It makes you feel like you have a purpose. You know, when I'm doing things like that, when I'm in touch with that, I feel alive and like I have a reason to exist and like I matter and I'm contributing something. And when I don't, it's like the opposite. I feel like, who gives a shit?
Right, but just be careful not to, not that you asked me, but just, I've been through this.
What's your take on it?
Just be careful not to rely too heavily on external sources of validation. They're very nice.
No, it's a personal thing. It is. It's all like my opinion of it.
Yeah.
Like when I think something is like really exciting.
Do you ever make lists of things? Like, do you ever make your lists of, you know, like, what did I do this year? And just write down everything that you accomplished professionally and emotionally and relationship-wise. I mean, if you see everything laid out, you could probably go like, oh, okay, actually, you know, because you tend to only really give yourself credit for like the last thing you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
no,
if you see everything laid out, you might go, oh, well, I think I am sort of on the right path, or at least I have, you know.
Yeah, I've done that the past few years, and it's a really nice thing to do.
Really?
For yourself.
So do you do it at the end of the year, or just
I do it at the end of the year, or I'll do it like midway through the year, and kind of just, you know, look at the things I did or I pulled off, or the things like even just like happy moments that I recalled. Like I kind of put them all on this like list of the year.
It's amazing the incredible things that you might accomplish that you just forget. Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, I did do that thing, you know, because you're so focused on
totally,
you know, short term.
Yeah,
it's a real pain in the ass.
I think about that a lot with like anxiety and depression too. It's like the your capability of being kind to yourself is like minute compared to how you can treat other people. So like the way that like we speak to ourselves, or some people do it, like,
of course
you would never speak to another person.
Of course,
like it's unbelievable, kind of like making a list and putting it in front of your face. Like,
yeah,
I think about that a lot, and I've talked about it in therapy too. Like, why can't I treat myself the way I treat other people? Like, if I saw someone else being like, I'm panicked about this and that, I'd be like, no, you're great. You've done all these things and blah blah blah. It's bizarre that you can't use that voice on yourself.
Do you have someone that you're close to, friend or family or relationship otherwise, that beats themselves up? And then you get mad at them for beating themselves up the way that you would get mad at someone else for beating them up?
Yeah, people I'm really close to I can abuse on that level.
No, I don't mean you. I mean like they beat themselves up.
They beat themselves up.
And then you're like, stop doing that. Like that you would say stop doing if it was someone else attacking them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so when you can see that, it's such a bad... We really are mean to ourselves. We're really mean to ourselves. And I think a lot of it just, you know, it's... early childhood stuff, at what level do you think you deserve? And what, you know, when people start getting out of that comfort level, then they sort of freak out, you know? I mean, like, you have this idea in your head of, like, this is who I am, and I deserve no better than this. And if things start going really well, you might start pounding yourself to balance it out or something. I don't know. But you don't have to do that. I think the universe is neutral.
Yeah.
No one, it doesn't really care. You make up all those rules in your head.
The universe is neutral. It's a nice thought.
It is. It doesn't, you know, when people think like things are conspiring, it's like, no, nothing is, you just.
I think about that. Yeah, like no one gives a shit.
No one gives a shit. Like, I the universe, that. Like a meaner way to say it is like the universe doesn't give a fuck.
They really don't. Like, no. I talk about that a lot with people that are close to me. It's like things that seem so huge in our lives, like no one gives a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Not the good stuff. Not like if you write a good song or if you do good work, but just like the other stuff you might be worried that is like in the ether. It's like,
yeah, I
no
always,
one cares.
I always say like it's like the best/worst thing you could like know yourself or tell somebody's like, no one gives a shit about you. So with that information, it's like, relax, no one gives a shit, so do what you want. But it's also, no one gives a shit, you know? So it's the best/worst thing you can find out, like, you know, just
well,
like,
people give a shit, but I just think in a broader sense they're just focused on their own shit.
Yeah,
they're not thinking about that thing you said at a party, and they're not focused on it. And you know, unless you tell someone, you know, like, hey, go fuck your mother with a grenade. In general, they're not thinking about a thing. You don't need to call them and go, remember that thing I said? That was really dumb. They're going to be like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, everyone's focused on themselves.
I've once, I got into a habit a while back. To, like, I would look in the mirror before leaving the house going, they don't care and you don't care about that. And then I would leave.
Yeah.
They don't care and you don't care about
that. By the way, I hope you were dressed up in, like, 70s garb with sideburns.
And, like, I was trying a new
outfit.
See,
I saw a zoot suit. Just like, just like,
oh, you saw a zoot suit.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't care and you don't care about that.
Yeah, and you don't care. Zip it and zap it and do.
Boom, 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 diddle it.
Well, how does this factor into your relationship then? Do you guys have a good balance with, you know, the different neuroses?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think it's good to, on one hand, people with similar neuroses shouldn't be together because then you could get into like, is this cancerous? And the person's like, I don't know. Like,
it could be.
Do you think it is?
But no, I think that you learn to be really good when you're in all your relationships in life. You learn to be good. You learn to be like a counter.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort
of. Or you try to be.
It seems like, I don't know, this is. I am not a therapist.
What are you going to say?
Well, it's just that.
However.
However,
if I may.
Here's a prescription. Wait, what?
It's just that if you had to watch your younger sister die, you have no control over that. So does that mean that you might be prone to trying to hyper-control everything else because you were in this situation when you were young that you couldn't fix? Are you trying to fix something now that you think maybe you couldn't fix when you were younger?
I don't know if it's as much fixing, but I have real control issues. Like, I have real germ issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about that a lot and think about all the ways in which, like, I need to control that and wash my hands and not touch certain things. And
yep.
But it's all bullshit because I think about it, you know, then I'll be in a car and I won't wear my seatbelt. And, like,
right.
I'll sooner die of that than, like, try to see. But, yeah, like, you know, it's why I'm so upset on planes.
Mm-hmm.
I have real control. Like, I want to be able to control things because I've had so many things that were that felt out of control. And not just also that experience, but then also what happens after that. Like, my life felt out of control for an extended period of time.
Sure.
You know, I couldn't control, like, you ever had panic attacks?
Yeah, of course.
Like, that is, it's such a profound experience because from the second you have your first one, and, like, you know, real panic attacks, not like, you know, you hear people like, oh, I'm having a panic attack. It's like, well, if you're having a fucking panic attack, you wouldn't be telling me. You'd be like,
you'd be fucking running around in circles clutching your chest.
Exactly. You'd be like strapped up to a cardio machine. You know, you'd be freaking out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I started having panic attacks, my life really changed because I felt like I had no control of my life. Like, I couldn't go to dinner. I couldn't go to a movie. I couldn't do anything because what if I had, you know how it is. The fear of having one is worse.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That was the first month when I was in college. I had them for a month and I didn't know what they were.
Yeah.
And the internet was not really a thing that everyone had access to all the time yet. So it was, I just didn't know. I was just like, there's something wrong.
I thought I was dying.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It felt like how strokes have been described to me.
And the fear of going out. I don't know why I needed to be home. It was still the same experience. But yeah, I couldn't go out because I was like, I could go and then I could freak out, but then I just need to race home.
Yeah. And the fear of if they happen is almost greater than them happening.
Well, that's because panic attacks are based on... And anxiety is based on the what if question.
Yeah.
Which is usually a terrible... Any question that you ask yourself that starts with what if is usually a terrible question.
Yeah.
Because it sends you in a very bad direction.
It's never like, what if my career goes the way I dream it will?
What if everything just works out rad today?
What if 20 years from now I look back and I've really accomplished it all?
What if I'm already fulfilled?
Yeah. What if my lunch is as good as I want it to be?
But that's where I think people actually have more control than they think. And when they find themselves asking bad what if questions, you can, you know, and even if it does nothing more than distract you for a minute, that's enough to stave off, you know, what could be a very horrible panic situation.
Well, it's all how you look at it. Like, you can see the human mind and body as like this flailing piece of garbage that has no control and might just get like shot in the head and like is emotionally unstable and can't do anything, and panic attacks make you feel like this like irrelevant, out of control thing.
Right.
Or you could see like yourself, your mind, your body is like this amazing machine that has so much control. And when you can rationalize things and talk through things yourself in your head, you really feel unstoppable. So I've really felt both ends of that spectrum really intensely.
Yeah. Which is funny because you can be so certain of that, but then occasionally you'll get hit by one where you're like, no, but this time, I really do need to be hooked up to a cardio machine.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, this was that thing.
They're
again.
So physical, but people who haven't had them don't understand how physical they are. Like,
yeah.
You can not see straight. You can your entire body will feel like it's not yours. You won't.
Oh, it's the word. If you go look at the if you go look at the dummy symptoms that go along, and I say dummy symptoms, in other words, they're not usually what you think they are.
Yeah.
But the list of symptoms is really extensive and crazy, and like, wow, that too can be a symptom of anxiety. Like it's pretty.
It's insane. And the long term symptoms are crazy. The worst is, I don't know if you guys ever have this, but do you ever disassociate?
I haven't really been disconnected in that way. I mean, I've certainly felt out of my body
a bit. That feeling where you're not there.
But I've had limited experience with that.
That's my least favorite.
Well, of course. I can imagine.
Because those are the moments, and that comes from panic and anxiety, where you're just like, well, I'm not even living my fucking life.
Yeah.
So it's not even like, with panic and anxiety, you're like, I'm living a horrible life. But when you disassociate, you're like, I'm not even living a life.
Oh, yeah. Well, there, you know, and if you, I've seen before people on, you know, and just in looking at anxiety forums, which I've had to do sometimes, someone will say, like, talking about disassociation, like, yeah, you know, I did some drug or whatever when I was young, and I've never felt like, and something like broke.
I thought I had that. I write about that a lot on the record. I talk about this acid experience I had with acid, and I literally thought that I ruined my life because I was like fucked for a couple months.
For a couple months.
Yeah, I was like totally. But it was also like a year after I lost my sister. It was terrible timing. It like unlocked a lot, but like it really blew me out. And I was just totally not there, and I was like home for months.
Well, my guess is that you probably just didn't want to deal with all of the.
Yeah,
it's strange that. The sadness from losing someone is really, it's very unique, because it's not like, I mean, you go through a breakup and you're bummed out about it, but you know exactly what it is that you're upset about. But actually losing someone, or like going through some really intense trauma, it just settles this really deep. It's just like, it's almost like, you know, like a very deep lake below a glacier or something, where it's just down there and you don't realize it. And you're like, I just feel weird. I don't know. Yeah. And then someone will go, oh, well, you know, your dad died. Went, oh my God. Of course that's what it is. Yeah. Like, you just forget.
You walk with it more than you do other things.
Absolutely. Because it just kind of settles into your molecules.
Like in a breakup, you'll be really distraught. And you'll do something like, oh, I haven't thought about Mary in a couple hours. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
Like with loss and that kind of grief, it's just a part of you now.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and then you just live with it forever, and it changes, but it never goes away, and it shouldn't. you know, that's also a beautiful thing.
Right.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want it to.
No, of course not. Because that's what keeps it alive.
Yeah, there's actually I saw this Australian horror movie called Babadook that's on demand right now. But it's great because the whole thing is a metaphor for like living with
Ricky Ricardo?
Loss and grief.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it sounds silly. It's a silly thing to kind of bring up, but it's a beautiful way of talking about there's this whole kind of demon type thing that's haunting this mom and her son, and it's like she's still dealing with the grief of losing her husband.
Yeah.
And she can't fight it. She has to learn to live with it. And it's so funny because you think you're just watching this kind of horror movie, and at the end you're like, oh shit, this said much more than I was prepared for.
Babadook? Yeah.
Babadook.
Babadook.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one I think about a lot, like how you want to be able to move on, but you don't want to leave everything.
Yeah.
But you don't want to take too much. You know, it's like you see these people that like have gone through things and they've become so fucking complicated. You don't want to be one of them.
Right.
But you also don't want to be someone that's like I'm new.
I don't want to compartmentalize emotions. I think that can lead to, a weird spot as a person.
Yeah.
Where you just start to go, okay, cool, that's over there. It's like, well, then what's an experience then if you're not?
It's actually not over there. You can.
You'll act as if.
Yeah.
But I think that you can get into some real weird dark places when you start to go, well, this is this section and this isn't me normally, but I can be that person. I think it'll start to really split your psyche up.
It's also impossible because when people try to do that, and anytime I've tried to do that, or if I've tried not to grieve, it will physically manifest.
Yeah.
In panic attacks. It will come out of your skin.
Oh yeah, your body,
if you don't deal with it.
Your body's gonna deal with it one way or another. You're either gonna deal with it or you're gonna be forced to deal with it. And one of the things that I was able to do, and again, I think it was because of the nature and the way that he died, but was just go, well, I'm just gonna feel how I'm gonna feel on a day-to-day basis for who knows how long. And if I feel like crying, I will cry. If I feel like being weirdly happy, I will be weirdly happy. And so basically not fighting the wave made it a lot easier than if it was like, I just don't want to feel, trying to fight it off. And it's like, I should experience those things.
Because that's and then all of a sudden you're like, instead of just having one feeling, you're having two feelings. Oh, I'm happy, but why am I happy? I'm bummed out. I'm happy because I should be bummed out.
Right.
And everything starts getting muddy, and then that's
a lot of people have issues with showing a lot of emotion. I think that's why a lot of people would normally suppress that kind of thing, which sucks. I think that there's a stigma of crying in public or just being really emotional, where people just don't like to look at that kind of stuff.
Right. Or in public, going, get in the truck. It's another.
Another thing that people
spend a lot of time at Cracker Barrels.
So have I.
I'm sure you have.
I really have.
I'm always sort of, I'm envious / a little frightened by the lifestyle of a nomadic touring musician. At least with stand up, you can sort of go to a city, fly home, go to a city, fly home. But that, I would love to do like a month or two just in a bus around the country, but I feel like at a certain point I might start going crazy.
It's weird because there's different moments of it. You feel the beginning of a tour. Each tour kind of is the same feeling, where it's like there's a feeling to the beginning and there's like this weird rock bottom part, and there's like this towards the end part. It's just you have a relationship with every tour.
And is the are you weirded out the most at the halfway point of the tour? Or where you go, oh, we're only halfway, or is it the beginning, or what's your weird point?
It's usually the halfway point, or it's weather related. Like cold and tour is a very stressful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's funny. It's I've been on tour for 15 years at this point, mm-hmm. pretty much consistently. So I feel like sometimes there's more comfort on tour than there is at home.
Yeah.
Just because because it's meant to be uncomfortable. So you're like, oh, well, this is supposed to be fucked up. So it's not crazy that I feel weird, but if I'm home in my apartment with all my shit around and I feel bizarre, then it's what the fuck is wrong here?
Yeah, but so when you're on tour, you're busy all the time.
No,
yeah.
Sort of.
Well, it's in itself, you could just be sitting on a bus.
It's like a hurry up and wait thing.
But yeah, but you're you get up that day, you have a show that night. All right, I have this thing to do tonight. When we have to eat before we get there, when I have to make this call. When we get there, we have to soundtrack, and then
there's a purpose.
Yeah, you have this purpose every day. Yeah. This guy, I think he's in the band Braid Advance or something like that. But he got out of being in a band, And he wrote this whole thing about like all this like weirdness that came out of, he's like, oh, it turns out like I wasn't ever busy. I didn't really ever do anything besides just play these shows. Cause he's like sitting at home now. He's like, what do I do? Like he doesn't know what to do without these little
things to do every day. I have an interesting parallel story, which was there's a brief period of time when I was young. I wanted to go into cartoons, and my best friend in high school was a storyboard artist, and he was a very successful storyboard artist. And I was like, well, maybe I could go into storyboards. You know, like maybe this is something I could do because I can draw okay. Yeah. And so he goes, all right, well, if this is something you want to do, then I'll tell you what someone told me to do. Just draw a guy like walking across the street. I'm like, what do you mean? What's he doing? And they're like, no, he's the guy. He's just there. Just draw a guy. I'm like, well, he's got to be doing something. I don't understand. And I could not just fucking draw a guy walking across the street. It was like, does he have any activity? Is he wearing something? Where are the car? Like, I couldn't. And it was almost like I couldn't define him. And this is where it loops back around, is not being able to define someone with by, you know, if they're not doing something. Which was such a strange experience. Yeah. And I just didn't become a storyboard artist because I could never just draw a guy. I would start and I'm like, what is his leg back? I don't know what he's doing. And so I wonder if that, you know, was more a product of my brain of like, how do you define someone unless they have a specific directive?
You still can't cross streets to this day.
I won't go across the street.
You won't.
No. I matrix jump over them.
But that's a really, it's like your brain almost like overcomplicated the whole thing.
Completely. But also, but the idea of trying to define someone by, you know, what they're doing and that's who they are.
Yeah.
And then you sort of have to remember that's not always.
Well, there's a lot of that on tour. Like, I'm on tour.
Right.
That defines.
Yeah. Purpose.
Yeah,
months,
I'm on tour.
Months of your life, I'm on tour.
Like, people say, what do you have to do? Like, oh, I'm on tour.
Yeah.
And it's, that means so many things because tour is 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
It's a really weird thing. I don't know what my life would be like without it or how I would move past it or what I'm going to do if my body can't tour anymore. It's just such a part of who I am. And it always has been. Like, since 15 is when I started touring.
Do you ever want to have kids?
Yeah, but that's another thing. Is that I'm not like, I feel like I love touring in a very healthy way. It's like I want kids. I have an apartment. I want to like have all that stuff too. And I love being home. I just always also want to be touring.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's not like but it is also a little bit tied to like losing my sister in those times. I was on tour right after that. And it felt like home was this like devastating place. And on tour was like anything can happen. You can wake up
every night
the next morning and feel totally different. So there is this like weight that I feel at home and not so much on tour that I do think goes back to that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe at some point you'll discover that you should just force yourself to do nothing for a month and see what happens. I mean, like, it's almost
rock opera.
Rock opera.
It's sort of like exploring, you know, it's kind of like why, you know, there's so much emphasis in the press on space exploration. It's like, what about ocean exploration? Like, why not go inward? Let's focus some resources and see what the fuck is here. You know, like what's in yourself. You know, taking an inner space.
Well, the brain is a big one. We're only at 15% knowledge of the brain, right?
I don't know what the specific percentage is, but
that's the last one I read.
I don't remember what the.
There's a new one, 16.
Yeah,
and then someone else said, like, yeah, the percentages thing isn't really a.
Oh, not capacity of what we use. I've heard that's bullshit.
Right.
A doctor recently told me that's crap, but I recently read something that said science only understands.
Oh, understands 50% of the brain.
Does.
Right.
Which really upset me.
Oh, you want to know what that other 85%?
Yeah, I'd love to know. And I'd love to like kind of like what we were talking about earlier, like a doctor saying you're going to start feeling a lot better. Yeah. Like if we knew more, then maybe like someone could like flick something in the back of my brain and they could be like, you know, you're going to be a little bit less worried about, you know, dying of pneumonia.
Right.
Just because that one isn't helpful for you. Other ones are, but that one isn't.
Yeah. I wonder if knowing about that stuff, your brain would awaken like the parts that, you know, it's like if someone's explaining, oh, these are other things the brain does. I wonder if that would trigger something in people's brains without having to do anything.
I think so, because knowing how like anxiety works it means so much to me and has changed the way I think. Like the grooves and how things get stuck. And if you get stuck on a thought, then it's like fixes a groove and it's more likely that you'll go to that thought. Like,
yeah.
It like makes me passionate to push past anxiety.
Well, it also, because in this case, the knowledge is the power that gives you control over the situation. You know how to deal with that information. But when things just start happening and you're like, I don't know, you're just stuck in this loop of helplessness and inactivity because you don't know how to sort it.
Yeah.
You don't know where it goes. So, you know, I think that's also probably helpful too. And again, that's a more, that's a control issue. You're like, oh, I know how to, I know how to control this anxiety.
I recently found out, like, I've been really into just like DJing, like playing music when my friends are hanging out. And I've always kind of liked it, but I like find myself doing it more and more.
How often do your friends hang out?
Well, I mean, like, you know, like it, like when there's a group of friends, like at a house or something like that, I'll be like, oh, let me plug in, I'll play it. You know, so like, you know, it happened last New Year's, and ever since then, I've done it maybe about 5 times.
Oh, cool.
You know, but I think about it a lot, and I started like making playlists and stuff like that, and I realized like my need to like play, like it gives me something to do, but also gives me control of the environment. It's like if I'm like, if I'm like picking songs to play and people respond to, I'm controlling the feeling of this environment without really participating in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. It made me, cause I've been friends with DJs for, you know, forever. And like, I never understood it until like, I'm like, oh, this is neat. You're interacting with these people, but you're not talking to them. You're just making a thing. And I think that might be a form of like controlling like one's environment or one's situation.
I read a thing recently about like men who go to like S&M clubs and stuff like that and get like beat up and tied up and whatnot, and like how the control is really in their hands because they're controlling the way they're being abused.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, wow. And it was like this whole study of like how S&M really is a control thing, even though it seems like it's an out of control thing. And it just really fascinated me.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I've never really,
and I thought about it a lot with the whole Giangameshi stuff going on.
Right. Which
S&M and
yeah.
Which it really became twisted to be about that, which is not about that.
Are you, I mean, I don't have any predisposition to like wanting to get beaten up or wanting to hit. I mean, like,
but I'm
just
sure there's elements that we all have of like, you know, that stuff, like a hair pull or, you know, or,
well, yeah, but like elements of, and all, everyone has fetish elements. Some of them make a lot of sense. Like I like college porn. And I think the reason why is I didn't go to college.
Hey.
So my impression.
I kind of have a
do
similar.
You?
Yeah. I'm like, so ooh, like, a dorm. This is what I assumed was happening.
Yeah. So like the dream is alive. Like, did you go to college?
I did go to college.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, whatever fucking really goes on. And I'm sure it sucks. Or maybe it's awesome. Or maybe it's somewhere in between.
I just, you know, I did go to college. So I like watching porn where people are getting their equivalency or, you know, going online and
or trying to achieve their dreams earlier.
Do you really
on.
Yeah. Like
medical dental
porn?
Office.
Yeah, it's like it's
because the dream is, it's like
the,
my impression of college from the things I've seen online is just that, like, that's what goes on.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a weird thing too. It's like, I guess any kind of like fetish or something like that. It's like I didn't realize it until like I saw it and I was like, oh, and then you saying it made me go, yeah, I do look up specifically.
Yeah, like Dare Dorm.
Yeah, yeah.
College fuck fest.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's all these college-related places.
That's fucking...
Yeah.
Yeah. Shit.
Well, I wonder if that's also... You know, there's... But there's also something about, in a broader sense, I'm guessing, if I'm just hyper-analyzing everything, there is something about soiling an institution. You know what I mean? Like, the institution of college.
Interesting.
There's something about, like, you know...
soiling an institution.
Yeah, you've been essentially...
Like college or cabs. Or fuck trucks.
Yeah.
What about trains? That's where everyone gets on a train and then lines up all the way at the end of the train.
Yeah.
It's like, what if Snowcatcher? What if
Snowpiercer?
What if Snowpiercer was a porn?
Yeah.
Snowpiercer becomes Snowcatcher.
Yeah.
Gross me out.
What? Gag you with a spoon?
Gag me with a spoon.
Hey! Nice. By the way, the song Valley Girl still totally holds up if you listen to it. It still fucking totally holds up, start to finish.
Wow, shit.
The satire. So maybe that is something about, you know.
I think we all have different fetishes. It's just based on different things that we have or haven't experienced.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. That's true. Although, I really honestly don't think I have anything that's, I mean, it's just like.
You wouldn't think it's out of the
No,
ordinary.
Sex is fun. With the ferrets.
With, right?
Ferrets.
With ferrets.
Yeah. No, yeah, I don't know. I keep, Jonah has this bit about how he races home one time to jerk off, and he gets in the door and he had all these dogs, and he runs into the bedroom, and right as he's about to come, the dogs run in and they think it's playtime, and so now he's in this situation. I'm sorry for doing your bit.
Oh, no, please.
But now he's in this situation where he's coming and having to kick dogs in the face to keep them away, and he's like, what if I did? That's the moment I discover that's a thing that I have. Like, yeah, so I'm constantly.
Is that how fetishes start? Like a weird thing happens,
yeah,
and then you go,
it could be.
Hold on, that was the best orgasm I've ever had.
Hold on,
yeah.
So yeah, I'm always wondering if something's gonna happen where I'm like, oh my,
yeah.
Oh that.
Yeah. Well, you need to put yourself in more situations.
But if I did that, then I wouldn't have as much control. Oh, no. Shit. No, you know, for me, control was about... well, I think there are a couple of things. Number one, my parents fought a lot when I was a kid, so...
Did they stay together? Child,
what?
They stay together?
They did not stay together. They divorced when I was 11. And so... They fought a lot when I was a kid, so you know that didn't. And my parents were both individually great to me. Like I didn't. Yeah. They were not shitty to me at all. They were wonderful, but to each other, they were. You know, they did not get along. And so there's a certain amount of like, oh, I seek control and stability because you know I saw this kind of tumultuous thing when I was growing up, and it was never abusive. Like it's never physically abusive. Just yelling.
Yeah. How's that work for you in relationships now in your life?
I don't know, actually.
Are you in one?
I do think sometimes I find myself in situations where I'm trying to fix something or trying to fix someone like, oh, I can stitch this up in a way that maybe I couldn't for my parents. I don't know. I'm sure there are many innovative ways that will continue to reveal themselves throughout my life. But then also, you know, now I'm such a stickler for... and I wouldn't say that I'm like a rabid control freak, but I really do like control, especially because, you know, I was such a loose cannon when I was in my 20s and just like drank a bunch and just did a bunch of crazy stuff that I feel like now I just need to have everything. You know, I never gave a shit about anything before, like paying bills on time or showing up places or, you know, like I could just drink for a week and it would be great. And now it's very much like, you know, calendars, very organized. Like I need to see everything laid out. I like to know exactly what's going on, you know. Yeah. So for me, I think that's how my control manifests itself. Just trying to be able to control the events. Yeah. And also, I also think that catastrophizing, which it sounds like you do a bit, is definitely a control issue.
Yeah.
Because if you're catastrophizing, you're basically predicting what you perceive as, you know, the easiest outcome. Like, well, of course this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, it's much harder for us to project like the, what if I succeed and I'm happy? You know, that's much harder to project because especially with what we do, there's just there's the you know, it's sort of like a batting average. The high success rates are actually still very low percentage wise. So we just get so used to rejection and brick walls and,
and also, like, kind of to what you're saying, like, if you're going to, like, have a career as absurd as, like, writing songs or playing music or something like that, which is, like, it's so hard, there's such a small percentage that'll work out.
Yeah.
Then, like, the percentage that your house will catch fire is probably small also, but it's, like, if you're the kind of person that's, like, banking on this little thing, it also works the other way. Sometimes I feel like I can imagine all the crazy, like, struck, getting hit by lightning or eaten by a shark percentage is happening to me too.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about that in positive areas of my life as well.
Did any of the songs of that became hit songs, were you like, oh yeah? Or were you like, what just happened?
I've never been like, oh yeah. It's always a big, it's a weird thing because it's like there's two parts of me. There's a part of me that like wants to take over the world and thinks I can do it and thinks I have all these great ideas and it makes me work like crazy. And there's a part of me that thinks I'm a total piece of shit and they're constantly like fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no arrogance to the other part. It's not like, it's more like a confidence. It's like an exciting feeling.
Sure.
It's not like a dark feeling. It's actually like, I love it and I wish I had more of it sometimes. But it's strictly artistic. It's not commercial. So I only think about that with like the quality of the work. But when something commercially becomes a big thing, I always think like, oh, that's wild.
Well, there's no, and also I think it's important to remind people that there's no merit in keeping yourself down or thinking you're a piece of shit. There's no merit in that. Like, cause I think some people are so worried, and I've talked to people before that are sort of like, well, I mean, I just don't want to be one of those egocentric people, you know, so I keep myself down. It's like, well, A, you're still focused on yourself, and B, there's no merit in shitting on yourself. Like, that doesn't do anyone any good. You can't do any good for anyone.
Really uninteresting also.
Yeah.
It's really like a tired concept.
Yeah.
You know, which is probably why, like, we're all so focused on Kanye, which is, you know, there's a lot of different elements about him. But one thing that's really exciting about him is how much he loves what he does and then goes and does it.
Right.
Yeah. And actually, like, does a great job at his specific work.
Well, I think it's, we always think about the type of artist that with that crazy amount of confidence that everyone's like, yeah, man, they're so shitty. Don't they know?
Yeah, I think everyone's terrified of being that.
Yeah, exactly. That's like that's a huge fear I have of just you know, overstepping my own boundaries.
Here's a fun thing to remember, though. Most of the things that you fear the most will never come to pass.
But for some people, they do.
Some things do. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. That you cannot say with 100% certainty that all of them don't.
Like, for example, like if Chris Brown looks in the mirror and he's like, is everybody saying I'm a terrible person? Yeah. Like, I wish I was there to be like, yes! Yeah. Like, and go away while you're at it. Like,
but then he says in the mirror, what you saying? And then he punches the mirror.
Like, what you think everyone is saying, it's actually 100 times worse.
No, Chris Brown looks in the mirror and he says, it doesn't matter what they say and I don't care about that. Oh my God, Joni, you're just like Chris Brown.
You son of a bitch.
And throws on his zoot suit and goes out. And
yeah, exactly.
But so it is stressful because there are these characters that like, it's almost the opposite. You're like, do you even know how much we all hate you?
Yeah. Like,
do you even know what's being said?
But I think ultimately, you know, then that's like defining yourself by other external things. And if you can be happy with yourself and like what you do and just be comfortable with that, then none of that stuff really matters.
That's true.
And I had a doctor once, you know, when I was a much worse hypochondriac that would say, look, if you hear hoof sounds, if you hear, you know, it's probably a horse and not a zebra. In other words, you know, the unlikely, it's probably not the unlikely thing. It's probably more the likely thing. Yeah. Of course, my answer is like, what if I'm in the savannah? You know, but
I had a doctor when I was going through, really, I was in Japan and I thought I was dying, but I was having a panic attack. And this much older doctor came over and he said something to me that I never forgot. I had him check me all out. And then we had this like really somber moment where we both realized that I was just anxious and it wasn't a big deal and I didn't need to like pay the premium to have the doctor come to my hotel room. But he looked at me and he goes, it takes decades for someone to understand their own body. And I think about it every day because it's so incredible. It's like there's this pressure. We're just supposed to get it. Everything we feel, it's us. So we're just supposed to get it. If we don't get it, then we're stupid or we're out of touch or we're not, you know, whatever it is. But like maybe it's going to take me till I'm 70 to understand what it really feels when I start to feel panic or anxiety and how I can soothe it.
Right.
I loved it. I think about it all the time.
It's a good quote. He might have also said, what if he whispered in your ear something like, have you ever seen naturally blonde pubic hair? Because he was in Japan. And
well, he probably left the room. He was like, there's it takes decades for someone to understand their body. I was like, thank you. Somebody's probably left. And he goes, that guy's fucking freak.
Yeah. By the way, Joan, I did not say that was something I was interested in. I said that was something.
It was kind of a detail thing to bring up.
There's a less.
Are you specific?
In Japan, the zebra is blonde pubes.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't overthink it.
That was a lot of metaphor mashing up there.
Little Japan. Zebra.
I want to go there so bad. I want to go to Tokyo so bad. No, yeah, I want
to
go.
I want to see that robot. I want to go to that robot burlesque bar.
It's so cool because it's. I've done a bunch of traveling, and of all the places I've been, everywhere I go, I'm like, oh, we look a little different, we talk different, we eat different things, but we're the same.
Absolutely.
But in Japan, it's like, this is another world, and I love it. It's so amazingly just culturally different.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I don't know when I'm going to have the time to go, but I really want to go.
Yeah, I really want to go.
Let's just go now.
Do it.
It's not that far from here. You guys live tonight. In L.A.
Yeah,
stop in Hawaii.
Yeah. Hawaii?
Hawaii-ne.
Hawaii-ne. Aloha.
Aloha.
Mahalo. Hey, get some more letters, Jonah, for your fucking alphabet.
We only need that many.
What is it, 12?
12, yeah.
12.
Yeah.
So, what are the 12?
You invented this?
No, but I'm from Hawaii.
You are?
Yeah, and to...
Really?
To graduate, yeah. And to graduate, you have to take like
always?
Hawaiian studies. What?
Like you were born there?
Yeah, born and raised.
Huh.
Yeah. You can't tell?
No. You look specifically East Coast.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny like being from somewhere so specific and having everyone like assume like it's like I got Northwest a ton when I first moved out here. I got Canadian and like there's once I started kind of like, you know, like drinking, like people were like, well, it's like, oh, you're from Chicago, right? Which is like a horrible thing to say about Chicago people. You drink a lot. You're from Chicago, right? But it's all the, it's a A E I O U, and then a K, W. I can't.
Failed. You can't go back there now.
Yeah, exactly. They're not gonna let me back.
We're in Hawaii, Main Island.
Yeah, Oahu.
Cool.
Yeah. Have you been?
Yeah, I'm going again in February.
Oh, nice. With bleachers?
Yeah, we're playing a show.
Nice. Where?
I don't know. It's nowhere. Anywhere else, I'd be like, I know the venue, the date, blah, blah, blah. Hawaii, it's like, my agent called and was like, we got this thing in Hawaii. I was like, let's do it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
The word Loa is probably in it somewhere.
Manapua.
By the way, Malakaliki Maka.
It's a thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Soon it will be.
Yeah,
it's already true. Christmas almost. Fucking Christmas. I saw them erecting the Christmas tree lot near my house.
The music is nice.
It's very nice.
I like the music takeover.
I like the music too.
It's very romantic. I mean, the one thing that cinema has done well for us as like a people is given us like a good sense of love in Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, like Christmas music makes me think of like getting the one you want that doesn't want you.
Yes.
Just feels like shit works out in Christmas.
Yep.
Also, I love that Paul McCartney Christmas song.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
The production is so cool.
It's such a cool song, yeah. And everyone shits on it. Everyone shits on that song.
It's a great song.
It's a great song.
I wonder what the next big Christmas song is going to be.
Who would do it? Who would it be?
You know what Christmas song I love and I never hear anymore at Christmas? It's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. Mom's making turkey and collard greens. When they did the Yo MTV, when they did like the MTV Christmas album, that first MTV Christmas album.
Oh, that's right.
Fucking awesome.
That was good.
Mariah's still the biggest.
Yeah.
And the best. It deserves to be the best.
It is really, yeah, that really one's good. Great. The Neil Diamond Christmas album is really good too.
Springsteen Live, Santa Claus Coming to Town.
I hear, yeah.
When he talks to Clarence during the
yeah,
song.
Yeah, exactly.
And he asks Clarence if he's been good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've been good, Clarence, and Santa's like, going to bring you a new saxophone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. He offers him a new saxophone.
Here he comes.
It's no, so Bruce, because Santa's just a figment of our imagination.
Yeah, that's right. What other Christmas songs are really good?
Paul's the best one. That's artistically the best. No, well, the best written song, I think, is... what's the dark one?
Which one?
Oh, the...
It's like it's super famous. Oh, my God. It's, like, really sad.
Oh, Last Christmas by Wham?
No, it's but that's a good one.
Christmas Shoes?
No, not Christmas
Fuck
Shoes.
That song.
Is that a song?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it the Ships one? No.
Oh, my God.
I'll Be Home for Christmas?
No.
White Christmas? Racist.
No.
Blue
it's
Christmas?
Like, it's, like, sad.
Blue Christmas? That's what you just said. Fuck. I don't know.
Can you think of any part of it?
It's probably
any,
Love, actually.
Any Carpenter's Christmas song? Which there are many.
Oh,
they put
yeah.
out like two double albums of.
I looked up sad Christmas songs. Have Yourself a Merry
Christmas. That's it. Have Yourself a Merry Christmas.
Have yourself. It is a fucking sad one. That's just that's when a guy is just alone with a bottle next to him.
We'll be together like if the fates allow. Like,
yeah.
From now on our troubles.
Well, that's someone who's made a very chilling decision. From now on our troubles will be out of sight.
Christmas for me, I'm Jewish, so every year you're not Jewish.
I am not.
But you look.
Funny that Neil Diamond released a Christmas
thing,
album.
I go to the.
Don't understand your crazy traditions. Why it's only one day of the year. I think that'd be really funny. Neil Diamond sings trying to understand Christmas songs.
But his album is really good. It's a Christmas album.
What's with that bush? Why not a candle? Like, he just doesn't really understand.
What's with that bush? That's what it's called. Neil Diamond, what's
which
with
also
that bush?
Described the era in which he thrived.
Yeah.
There's a really phenomenal Christmas song by Rufus Wainwright and the McGarrigle family called Spotlight on Christmas that I fucking love.
I don't know.
It's a really...
But I love him and them.
It's just Rufus's, like, you know, he's got the...
Is his sister on it?
The sister, yeah. His sister's
I prefer
on
her.
It.
I actually like her voice better.
Oh, you do?
I think she's brilliant.
Saw them one
I'm
year.
I'm a Loudon fan.
Really?
I saw them one year at Carnegie Hall.
Swim Song. Swim Song is one of the best Wainwright songs.
Interesting.
Yeah, do you know that one?
Yeah.
I can't get enough of it.
Okay.
But I also like Rufus and Martha.
That's right.
Well, see, so that's good. You know, it's nice that that you're excited about the holiday coming up and that there's...
I don't like buying people gifts. That fucking makes me crazy.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to send thank you notes and you know...
Well, yeah, but also, I'll be fair, I don't want gifts.
That's good.
I don't care. I really don't. No one ever gets me anything I want. I don't want anything. So it's like, I don't care.
What about GIFs, a short internet movie?
GIFs?
Yeah.
Short internet movie. GIF to me is, by the way, porn related, just to circle back to that.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, I think most people my age, GIF, JPEG, Avi.
Yeah.
Remember Avi?
You're a VLC player for some of those files, friend.
Like, those AVI files.
Do you remember going to like a chat room?
Avi's the guy running the camera in the college porn.
Avi. That's how
Avi,
I got the name.
You this, bro?
My friend Avi Berman.
I'm going to bring up this song. Well, whether I don't, we're at an hour and 6 minutes already, which
oh,
is
really?
Amazing because it's honestly just felt like 7 minutes to me.
Hey, I like that Bleacher sound.
Thank you.
It's really good.
Thanks a lot.
It's really good.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah, you should be. It fucking flows too. It's a good sequence.
That is something that
like
I do.
It's like, you know, because I like new records. I like to put them on and I'll just loop them. I'll loop the record.
Yeah.
And I like it's like the new the Always record is like one of those records I can do that too, and then you know like Kurt Vile and the Violators. It's like there's certain records that I can like. It's like in yours is a good
well,
sequence.
It's,
good
it was thought of like I always write the first song, I write the last song. Like it's very, it's never I've never written 25 songs, pick 12 and sequence them. Like the songs I wrote, those were all the songs I wrote. They were written to be in the place. Too often a big like. A big symptom of 2014 is these albums that sound like 12 singles, not albums.
Right. Yeah.
And they're so absurd. Like it's so sad, you know, like, so I've felt so compelled, like this has to be an album, you know, made for the people who are going to listen to it as an album. Cause people still buy albums. It's, you know,
yeah,
it's not, or people still listen if they don't buy them. They still listen to albums. Yeah. Music is bigger than ever. It's just less money in it. And I think,
yeah. There's more people buying, you know, vinyl more than
ever. People should remember. I feel like the conversation about the music industry falling apart should be separate from the conversation about that music as if not more important than ever.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Where the money's flowing is a separate conversation.
Yeah, has nothing to do with like, but it's like everyone talks when they say like it's like music's not doing good. No, music's fucking flying high. It's the industry. It's the business behind.
We're talking about
the delivery method, the platform. It's all screwy.
Yeah, but it's not like that's weird and that'll get figured out and we'll all be fine. You know, it's more like, you know, great records are still coming out. Bands are playing amazing shows.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds are constantly changing. It's exciting stuff.
Yeah, so it's really cool.
Why don't you think of your body like music? It'll all sort out and it'll all be fine.
and just blow off into a,
yes.
a fiery ball. Like Pippin,
just let it.
That's
go.
What I want to. Pippin wanted to blow up.
Let it. Right.
Yeah. Were you about to do some Let It Go bit?
No, you were.
You were.
No, I think you were. Shut up, you were. You were going to do Let It Go. You shut up. No, fuck you. That'd be a great podcast. No, fuck you.
No, fuck you.
And it's just basically just someone blaming everyone else for all their problems.
Yeah.
No, fuck you. Well, thank you. So do you want to plug anything specifically or?
Well, any plugging I would do at this point would be undone by everything we already talked about if someone's not interested in things we said. So I feel like we've had such an extensive conversation that people are either going to look me up or not at this point.
I think they will. You are, it's just your name, Jack Antonoff at Twitter.
Yeah. Or the Bleachers one is Bleachers Music, but they all sort of become one thing nowadays.
Oh, by the way, it was very nice to meet you and, Lena at the Emmys.
Yeah.
That you were both so sweet and I was so nervous and she made me feel so comfortable.
You can find out a lot about people at award shows. I really think that.
Because that's when they're in like weird.
Well, it's like a horrible atmosphere. There's like tons of famous people around. It was like press around. And it's like when you meet people, like when I met you just for a second, it was like, oh, what a nice guy. It's like, okay, that's a you know, that is a really interesting, nice person, very different than a lot of the experiences that you have throughout the night.
Well, you know, everyone's just scared.
It's a weird environment.
Everyone's scared and they're uncomfortable and they don't want to be exposed and they're nervous or they don't want to, I don't know. Because you know why? Because you cannot control that environment.
No.
And so, you know.
But like it could be so fun. Like
It should be fun.
I met a whole bunch of people from Game of Thrones. I was having the time of my life. Also, I was just there being supportive. It wasn't like an award show I was involved with, so it was easier.
You just got to have fun, relax.
But like, Game of Thrones. So cool. I met the Hound.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah?
I met Jon Snow. I met George R. Martin.
Game of Thrones.
It was really exciting. That show specifically, when you meet the people from it, it's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Because they're so otherworldly. It's just
yeah,
like,
they're not from here.
Yeah, I got so confused. I was watching that God Save the Girl.
It's not like meeting Laura Dern. You know?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like-
exactly. But like, there's a girl from Game of Thrones that's in that Belle and Sebastian guy's movie, God Save the Girl.
Which girl?
I'm trying to think of
is
who
it Marjorie?
Is.
She's been doing a lot of work lately.
I think so.
Natalie Dormer?
Is that her name?
Is that Natalie Dormer?
I'm trying to...
Natalie Dormer?
Yes.
Trying to think. I'm trying to remember who she is in the show. It's fucking, there's 100 characters on that TV show. But if you look her up, she's like very, very obviously.
Who? What character?
I'm trying to think.
What does she look like?
She's
She red hair?
Yes. But she's not the one. She's not like.
She's not Jon Snow's.
Not Jon Snow's lover.
Not Lena Headey? Not Lena Headey?
No. Joffrey's wife.
No, not Joffrey's wife. What is the movie called? God Save the Girl?
It's not Joffrey. It's Joffrey.
Geoffrey.
No, it's J-O-F-F.
Oh, is it also geography?
No, it's not any of those things. You're just adding vowel sounds, you fucking Hawaiian.
What?
God save the girl.
God help the girl?
Not a film.
What was I doing? Was I just falling asleep listening to Belle and Sebastian?
God save the things.
Imagine. The girl from Skins. Oh, she was also in Skins. That girl.
I don't see her. I can't see her from
the little...
Oh, yeah, she plays, what's his fuck?
Oh, yeah, fucking the big guy, yeah, Sam's, yeah, that's right, Sam's,
Oh, yeah, I saw that poster or trailer or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good, and she's great in it, she's very funny.
Who from Belle and Sebastian makes films?
What?
Who from Belle and Sebastian makes films?
It's the main guy, what's his face?
Belle?
Yeah, it's the singer. It's he crowdsourced the movie.
Oh, you're right.
Stuart Murdoch. Yeah. Yeah, he wrote it. It's a musical.
Oh, great.
Yeah, yeah. And he crowdsourced the whole thing. And it's good. It's a nice little, it's very twee, but it's very good.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been watching Sonic Highways? You said you like rock docs. You've been watching Sonic Highways?
I haven't just because it started the day I left for tour.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm this is like totally the old model. I'm sure corporations would love to hear me say this, but like, when, you know, all the streaming business is at the whim of Wi-Fi, and if you don't have it all the time, if you're like traveling, you just need to buy episodes of stuff on iTunes.
Yeah.
I just buy tons of stuff, which is, I feel like I'm the last person that's still just buying everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I still.
That's the big thing when people talk about Spotify and Netflix and that whole side of music and film industry and whatnot. It's all at the whim of internet, which is not as big a part of the conversation as it should be. So everyone's like, when's Spotify going to take over? And like, the answer is when internet is everywhere all the time.
Which is going to be very difficult. And I mean, we can get that in chunks of the country, but America's just too fucking big.
Yeah. But what do you think? 5 years, internet will just be everywhere?
It should be most places. But you really do forget how much empty space there is.
But now the cars have internet.
Cars do have internet, so which is great because I was not distracted enough while I was driving, so I need more things to pull my attention.
I have let my license expire because I am aware that I'll probably kill myself if I keep driving. Seriously.
Well, that's good that you
let it happen, and I'm moving on.
Yeah, and that's not... Unless, again, you're driving with your entire friends and family all in the same car.
Problem there is I'd have to make sure it was enough of an intense... whack or fly off a cliff that we all go out.
I think flying off a cliff would do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just go up the one.
Yeah, but what if it doesn't?
And hit a left. Go up the one and hang a left. Anywhere.
That is an excellent place to end the podcast. Jack, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. And...
yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You know the song?
Yeah, I've heard the song.
Don't forget all the horses and toys. Our roof just sounds way less vibrato.
Yeah, totally does.
What year is this?
It's a few years old, the McGarrigle Christmas Hour album. Jonah hates Christmas. Recording this so we can get it on the end of the show. Let us say for these 12 days. We won't get in trouble for this, right, Kenny?
Yeah. Oh,
is that John Mayer?
No, the more commentary, the better. Listen to Rufus shine a spotlight on Christmas.
So is his mother in there.
Kate and Anna. Which I think are the... Is it a mother or is that the sisters?
Just the McGarrigle... No, the McGarrigle twins.
Right.
Or isn't that one of his... Isn't that his mother?
God.
I don't know.
I need to go back and figure this all out.
We're doing that for kids. You know, if you want to do a I've always wanted to try something.
Sure.
If you put the volume back up.
Yeah.
A real natural fade. See if this works.
Working?
The analog fade, the IRL fade.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.